Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Redington Limited Q1 FY24 earnings conference call. This conference call may contain forward-looking statements about the company, which are based on the beliefs, opinions, and expectations of the company as on date of this call. These statements are not the guarantees of future performance and involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Rajiv Srivastava, Managing Director, Redington Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
All right. Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and a very warm welcome to our earnings call for Q1 FY24. With me in the room, I've got my Global Chief Financial Officer, S.V. Krishnan, and I've also got Deepika, who is the Chief Analyst over here on this call.
Good morning.
So I'm going to just give you a bit of a summary on how the quarter went by and how we see the market over the near term, and then we can open it up for Q&A if that is okay. We are pleased to report another strong quarter of sales and gross profit growth, supported by solid execution across businesses and geographies. Redington continues to gain share and secure new opportunities in the markets that we compete in. At 21,251 crores, our overall global revenues have been the highest ever for any Q1, growing by a very strong 26% YOY. And at 1,248 crores, we have registered our highest-ever Q1 gross profit with a 17% YOY. Our EBITDA degrew by 1%, our PAT degrew by 21%. This quarter has been clearly a tale of two geographies for every financial parameter, and let me give you the figures for the two geographies that we operate in, namely SISA, which is Singapore, India, and South Asia, and ROW, which is the rest of the world, all the other countries of Middle East, Africa, Turkey that we operate in. So our revenue for SISA grew 24%. The rest of world revenue grew 29%. Our gross profit for SISA grew 24%, and the rest of world gross profit grew 11%. So both had a very, very positive sort of an outlook. Our EBITDA for SISA at 266 crores grew 19%. Our rest of world EBITDA at 217 crores was a degrowth of 17%. Our SISA EBIT of 246 crores is a 17% growth. The rest of world EBIT at 194 crores is a 19% degrowth. And PAT of SISA at 149 crores is a 2% growth, and the rest of the world PAT at 99 crores is a 41% degrowth. So clearly, like I explained, the two geographies are behaved differently. Redington achieved record revenue and.
Okay. All right. I will do that.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Thanks so much, and great. Good morning and welcome to everyone for joining this call. Our apologies for this technical glitch early morning. I was going on reading my commentary, and I didn't realize that we were disconnected. I hope you can hear me loud and clear, and let me just give you a sense of what and how the quarter went by. Like I said, we are pleased to report another strong quarter of sales and gross profit growth, supported by solid execution across businesses and geographies. Redington continues to gain share and secure new opportunities in the markets that we compete in. At 21,251 crores, our overall global revenues have been the highest ever for any Q1, growing by a strong 26% YOY. And at 1,248 crores, we have registered the highest-ever Q1 gross profit with a 17% YOY growth. EBITDA degrew by 1%, and PAT degrew by 21%. Now, this quarter has been a tale of two geographies pretty much across every financial parameter that we measure. And let me give you the figures. Revenue for SISA, we report results around SISA and rest of the world. SISA is Singapore, India, and South Asia. Revenue for CESA grew by 24%. Revenue for rest of the world grew by 29%. Gross profit CESA was 24%. Rest of the world was 11% growth. EBITDA for CESA at 266 crores was a growth of 19%. EBITDA for rest of the world at 217 crores is a negative 17%. EBIT for CESA at 246 crores is a plus 17%. And EBIT for rest of the world at 194 crores is a negative 19%. CESA at PAT at 149 crore for CESA is a 2% growth, and PAT at 99 crores for rest of the world is a negative 41% growth. So we did achieve record revenue and profit margin for Q1 of the year as our continued investments in improving our tech capabilities, building deeper partner relationships, making the breadth of our offerings more comprehensive, and innovations in business model begin to pay off. You know, we made significant changes to our business model as well. For the first time ever, we've had 5 consecutive quarters of 25%+ growth. Now, delivery has been broad-based, with all our operating regions contributing to growth. All our theaters, India, Middle East, Africa, Turkey, have been pretty robust from a revenue growth perspective. PAT is down 21% YOY due to increased interest and factoring costs that we've seen due to all the financial disruptions that we are going through. Outside of that, our PAT would have grown by 9% if we take the downsides away. And it is largely impacted in the rest of the world, while CESA has delivered a PAT growth of 2%. Now, just to give you a bit of a qualitative, Redington's digital transformation has been a key factor of regrowth catalyst as we transition from the role of a traditional distributor of supplying products to a much more technology aggregator, becoming a more holistic tech solutions provider. We are addressing the market demand for consumer devices and smartphones, for hybrid work and hybrid learn environments, for small and medium businesses, for enterprise technology solutions, including cloud infrastructure for servers, storage, networking, and security. We are also responding very strongly to the emerging technology environments, fueled by the growing adoption of 5G, Internet of Things, edge computing, and generative AI. And you all know generative AI has been so disruptive already, and we see many impacts of that happening, and it is only fair for us to have a very strong pivot on generative AI. While technology distribution has been our core value proposition, we are focused on building competencies and capabilities to provide managed services for private and public cloud security and audits. Our initiatives ensure that we continue to increase and enhance the value that we offer to our customers, thereby serving them better and gaining share and accelerating our growth momentum. Business dynamic during the quarter has been mixed. Technology demand of related to work from home and learn from home has been subdued. It has actually, in fact, degrown. You would have followed the IDC results for global PC industry that came out very recently. And that PC industry globally has declined 13.4% year on year. Smartphone shipments have declined globally by about 15%. In fact, PC and smartphone industry now pretty much is at 2014 levels, which is way back. And I'm hoping that that tide will swing and turn in the positive territory shortly. However, the demand has been very robust for data center infrastructure products, for server storage, networking, software and security, and also for cloud products. As people get back to office, so back to office has already necessitated data center procurements to happen. Migration to cloud has been obviously a very strong catalyst. So hence our improved engagements with enterprises, with grid market and SMB customers and partners more than made up for the device drop in market size that we saw. And so we have grown our enterprise products by about 40% and we have grown cloud by 44% in Q1. So obviously in our portfolio, new technologies are the ones which are leading. As I mentioned to you last time as well, the geographies we operate in are largely consumption and investment driven, with most GDPs showing a positive growth trend. Although the guidance for growth in each GDP in each country has been reduced, but this will continue to grow in the positive territory. Clearly, there has been a negative to stable business climate, and governments have been a very strong spender in times like these. We know for sure that the financial situation across the world continues to be volatile, and there are obvious headwinds. And let me call out a few. I mentioned about GDP. Global GDP growth rates have been called down, and as per analysts, there continues to be a chance of recession in some leading economies of the world. For inflation, even though inflation seems to be cooling off, at 7.2% globally, it continues to be high in most parts of the world. Very high inflation regime, high commodity prices, and increase in interest rates. So therefore, the cost of capital has gone up very significantly. In fact, the interest rates are the biggest dampener between last year and now that have created such a huge cost of capital increase, which has gone up significantly. The borrowing rates, you would know, are the highest right now since September of 2007. So we can go back more than 15 years, and that's how the borrowing rates have been. These impact demand and margin, impact on PBT and PAT. There has been some currency devaluation in some of the operating countries of ours, namely Egypt, Nigeria, Kenya, Ghana, Turkey, Sri Lanka, and Bangladesh. All these countries have seen a good devaluation of the currency. While there continues to be a delay in delivery of certain networking products impacting the project business, good news, we are out of the shortage situation of the technology industry, and that has eased considerably, very, very significantly. So any procurement which is non-project, you can find that the fulfillment becomes that much more speedier, that much more lesser time to fulfill the project requirements. Sometimes in the networking products, we continue to get challenged on delivery. Therefore, overall news has been some good and some not so good, the financial indicators. And though we expect these to balance out, we will be watchful as we have always been and cautious over the next few quarters. As we project ourselves into the future, we do anticipate a constrained demand environment as we are seeing right now in certain categories like access products, which is the PC and the print and smartphones, but better in other categories, much better in other categories like data center, cloud, services and accessories. We therefore expect to sustain a reasonable revenue and margin growth from our recently implemented operating improvements amid the backdrop of geopolitical and financial uncertainty. We have demonstrated that despite an evolving macroeconomic environment and difficult conditions for the technology industry, we remain well positioned to continue our growth, to grow our business profitably by helping our customers and helping our suppliers navigate an increasingly complex market, and which is getting more complex from a technology procurement perspective. Net-net, in summary, I would say our strategic initiatives, our execution capability are delivering for us, and those make us extremely optimistic about the future. At this moment, I'm going to step back and stop and open it up for question and answers so that we can interact.
Thank you very much, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have the first question from the line of Nitin Padmanabhan from Investec. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, everyone. So first, if you could give us some context to the drop in margins in the ROW business, both other expenses and employee costs have all up. So if you could give some context there, anything to do with provisioning and so on and so forth. The second question is maybe a little more philosophical question, is that our growth has been consistently very strong, but at the same time, I think we have sort of hit a working capital days of around 40 days, which we have not seen in quite some time. So historically, we have had this risk-adjusted growth philosophy. So if you could just give some context to what we are seeing in the numbers, right? Usually we would sort of slow down on growth in a bad environment. So just wanted your thoughts on both those. Thank you.
Okay. I think great questions, Nitin. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take the first question, which is context to margin drop, and then I'll hand it over to SVK, which is SV Krishna. I'm sure you know him, to talk to you about risk-adjusted growth and the working capital and how it is going to pan out. Okay, but let me just give you a sense. you know, our if you take a look at our EBITDA in Q4, for instance, Q4 FY23 sequential previous quarter at 2.69%, our EBITDA now at 2.27%, and our gross margin between last quarter and this quarter has just seen 12 bits sort of a difference in you know in the positioning or in the drop. That's pretty much what has taken place between 5.99 to 5.87% is the gross margin drop, which is 0.12%, which is that's the only drop in gross margin. Now, how do we this gross margin will translate to about 48 odd crores of a gross margin drop. That's all that took place in this quarter. And for those two, we had that gross margin drop, which we see is amounting to about 25 crores, and we made technology investments into our business of about 22 crores. Now, those choices are available to us to continue with the technology investments or should you not. And we think to secure our future, it is important for us to stay on our tech investment curve because all the platforms that we're investing in have been extremely, extremely robust, and they are giving us the benefit of expansion of our growth, expansion of our territories, expansion of our geographies that we are seeing in now. So we chose to make the technology investments, and that's how the whole margin equation plays out. Now, if you think of it this way, we maintained a very, very strong business momentum. Okay, we maintained largely our gross profit got maintained, and despite the tough, you mentioned about the tough economic situation, despite the tough economic situation, we maintained our gross profit, we maintained our business momentum very, very strong. Just for a 12 bits to a question that are you doing revenue extra and all that, just for a 12 bits drop in our gross margin, I don't think we should be reducing our business at all. It is a difficult rate key, but I think we managed our business extremely, extremely well to get to the point that we did. And then there are elements around business mix as you go forward. So I think those are the elements that we were focused on, and I'm glad it all played out extremely well from our perspective. SVK, you want to talk to him about the working capital thing?
Okay, so let me first address your third point. I think it is very important that you get a comfort. You haven't compromised on the risk adjusted growth at all. See, the way in which we need to look at the quarters that we are in. See, on the back of the last 3 years, a very high demand, which has led to every constituent growing at a very fast pace and quite profitably, with all the balance sheet factors in a best of the case situation. So now, in some segments and in some markets, there are some challenges that are coming up. It's important we need to decide how we play our game with the brands. And the choice is, when we find some of the smaller players are having difficulty and having a good chance of even exiting the market, that's where you need to be more aggressive. So, it is a very balanced role. We haven't let the risk factor out of place. But having said that, we think it's important that we need to be very material, very important for the vendor. And I'm sure Rajiv can articulate. Many of the brands are talking in terms of strategic alignment with us, which would not have been possible if you are growing the thing better than the market. So I just want to give you a comfort that there is no let up on that point. So let me move on to the other expenses. See, there are a few factors that had come in place which had impacted other expenses, which started panning out in the beginning of last year, and it actually continues to be so. So ideally, you need to look at for this the quarter on quarter, which is between Q4 and now. I would want to call out two reasons which are important. One, as Rajiv mentioned, is in the form of I hope I'm audible. One is the investment part. We have a choice. Definitely, we have a choice that could have helped us in terms of better operating profit. But we thought from a long-term perspective, since there is a structural change that's happening in the industry, some of these investments are non-negotiable. So we have gone ahead and we are very clearly on track. And there again, I want to mention, we are not going too aggressive. We are being very balanced, knowing that this is our profitability and this is what we can afford. Second is the factoring charge. See, in some of the markets like Turkey, it's very unfortunate. There are serious challenges in terms of getting bank funds. And there are regulatory changes that are happening very, very frequently, which pushes us for raising the funds in various forms. And one such model, which has become quite constant in the last few quarters, is factoring. And this is coming at a higher cost. But if we want funds for the business, we have no choice. And that's something which builds up into the other expenses. So let me pause in case there are any further queries.
Two follow-ups actually. One is, over the last two quarters, the other expenses is up by 88-89 crores. Largely, most of this would pertain to tech investments, and when are they likely to sort of ebb off? The second one was on the what is the provisioning for this quarter on receivables and all of those things, inventory and all of those. So that was the second one.
Okay, I think on the first question about tech investments and how much will you continue and when will you sort of reduce that. I think tech is a very critical investment in our business. I do see those tech investments continuing for some more time because the way we are making our investments, and our desire is to become the number one digital distributor in the world. As the world is moving towards more digitally oriented business models, that digital distribution, that vision is unique for anybody else. And I'm so happy that a lot of our businesses already started shifting to our digital distribution model, which will bring us far more efficiencies in operating leverages over the course of the next couple of quarters. I do see it as a 2 to 3 quarter, 2 or 3 quarter initiative furthermore for it to become 100%. By the end of this year, I think we should see this to be completely rolled out in with all the features and functionalities. It is already working right now. 20% of our business is shifted there, but it will get more functionally rich as you go forward. The other initiative that you know is the cloud platform that we created. And that cloud platform is working so well now with companies, with hyperscalers like Amazon, Google, and Microsoft, all three of them. And that's a significant investment we made to make sure that we can do our cloud business in a much more automated fashion. So those investments are really right up there in the right manner. Some of the investments we are making are also internal because we also need to become internally most automated organization as the world shifts towards digital. All our internal processes have to be digitally oriented. So we see those investments continuing over the course of next this financial year. That's something which is going to continue.
In terms of provision,
provisions. You can
The inventory provision as a percentage of revenue for the quarter is about 9 bps. Which is slightly higher than our long-term average of about 6 bps. The AR provisions, again as a percentage of revenue, is about 11 bps, which is broadly in line with what had been there in the past.
Sure. Thank you so much and all the very best.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management will be able to address questions from all participants in the conference, please limit your questions to 2 per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, please rejoin the queue. Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Vivek from DSP Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
So, good morning. My question again will follow up on the working capital and inventory. You'd actually guided for higher working capital as it goes from work from home to work from office. Now, on the inventory, would you, maintaining inventory in a slowing environment is a tough challenge. And so you've increased the provision. Is it like kind of like stage one provisions that NBFCs make, standard asset provisions? Is that the way you look at it in terms of increasing provisions? That's point question number one. And question number two is, how much of the inventory is protected for any losses, and you know, what can be the potential losses that can come from inventory? Those are my questions. Thank you.
Okay, let me I'll leave it to SVK to handle a bit, but I'm just going to give you a bit of a sense on the inventory and how the market is shifting in their buying patterns. Okay, just to give you a broader sort of a context of the market. There are two kinds of inventories we carry. One, we carry inventory for regular run rate stock and sell business, which obviously has a chance of being forced into repricing and losses if you have to. So if you carry that inventory, that I would always think is has got potential of being repriced. Then we carry a lot of our inventory is on the basis of back-to-back business. That back-to-back business comes from customers at fixed prices. We carry that inventory, we order that inventory, we carry it with us till the time we get all the balancing equipment so that we can supply to the customer in one single shot and the project can get completed. That back-to-back inventory does not have a chance of getting repriced because it is a fixed price end customer contract that you're trying to execute. So I hope you get the sense and differentiation on those two inventories. And Krishna, you want to take it?
Yeah. See, just wanted to clarify from the perspective of the working capital increase. Uniquely, if you find, while there is a 12-day increase, I'm talking year on year between June 30th of last year and now, from 28 to 40 days, the significant increase has come on account of lower AP days. It's not on account of increase in AR days or increase in inventory days. And unfortunately, as we are coming out, as Rajiv said, from the shortage period, the high demand period, the COVID period, etc., vendors are also are rolling back to the earlier credit model, the usual credit period. So some of the higher credits that we could enjoy is going away, which we think is and is more sustainable. Maybe then your next question is, how would then we control the working capital? We think there are levers available in all the three components in terms of making sure that we improve on that. Second is also a big change where, the vendors where we get less credit period had performed better, that also has contributed. So it is not an account of inventory increase. I thought I should clarify. Second, just to supplement to what Rajiv said, what we have seen in the past is, the provisions are sufficient enough to cover up for any dilution in the value of the inventory. While there is a consistent provisioning model and that's something which is standard, there are no exceptions that are considered, we have found by experience that these are sufficient and we are hopeful as we move forward, some of these getting sold, we should get back many of these into the P&L. Inventory protection, yes, that continues to be so. Any price drop which are initiated by the vendor, we are completely protected. And in some of the products where obsolescence risks are high, there is also stock rotation that's possible. So broadly, we are protected. I wouldn't say 100% if you make a mistake in stocking call. Obviously, that's something that we need to handle. Again, even in that case, we can go back and negotiate with the vendor. And whatever support he gives beyond that is something that we should take, which is where we have the inventory correction. I hope I have answered you.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Just one follow-up question. In terms of, you had mentioned that there are two kind of inventories that you keep. So bulk would be the larger project type inventory. Would that be right? Or
how would that is be? That is right. That is right.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much and wish you good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Aegis Lakhani from Unify Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, congratulations on strong execution. It speaks about your executional capabilities.
Mr. Lakhani, your voice is not clear, sir. There is an echo. Can you please use your handset?
Yes, it is better.
Thank you, sir. Please continue.
Yes. Congratulations team on a strong sales quarter. It speaks about your execution capabilities. Krishnan sir, could you quantify what has been the factoring cost increase quarter on quarter? When is Turkey likely to settle? When do we see these factoring charges going away? What is the interest rate regime in that constituent?
Okay. So for last quarter, we had a factoring cost of about 49 crores, which has moved up to 60 crores. So that's the increase between Q4 and now. These, as I've said, these are costly and mainly in Turkey. As you know, Turkey interest rate in the normal situation itself is quite high. It ranges between 25% to 30%, and the factoring cost is even more than that. It is a bit of a volatile market in various sense. But I need to tell you that credit to the team there has managed to ensure there is a growth and also maintained profits. I won't say good profitability, but they haven't.
They've always been profitable.
Yeah, they've always been profitable. Let me put it that way.
Got it. And Krishnan sir, what do you expect? How do you expect the year to pan out? Because we had 150 crores of factoring charges in FY23 from your annual report. So how are you expecting the year to play out in Turkey?
We think for one more quarter this will continue. The reason why I'm saying this is because there was a presidential election 1.5-2 months back. The existing government is continuing. However, some of the economic policies are changing. There are new people who have come in the finance ministry. They have increased the interest rate on one single date by 6.5%, which was kept abysmally or artificially at a low level. So we think some sense is coming into the market. They were holding on to forex rates. That now is now let free. So maybe about a quarter more we may have to go through. After that, I won't think it will come back to normal. It will definitely be better than this. Sorry, Rajiv.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think we expect Turkey to turn around because some of the new decisions that the government has made after re-election are very, very positive. Aligning the inflation to the global markets, aligning pot to the real figures, aligning the interest rate to the real figures. All of those extremely positive statements because it inculcates so much of, generates so much of confidence in the external investment community that now the situation of Turkey from an economic perspective is far more real than it ever was. It's not artificially held up. And once you have a situation which is far more real, you get more investments into the country and you get far more robust economic growth rather than anything else. So I think Turkey has been extremely, and we continue to be very bullish on Turkey.
Just to give you a number, for the quarter, Turkey had a revenue of about 2,200 crores. All these are in crores. And they have made a profit after tax of about 12 crores. So, I mean, it's not great, but to maintain 12 crores when interest rates are at what I had said is something which is notable. Thanks.
Noted. You know, Rajiv, my next question is to you. You've been, you know, since you have come in, your strategy has been to create a parallel sales organization. So we wanted to understand what this, parallel sales ecosystem that you've been building has really been doing and how this will impact, the future. Also, today what sits in your employee cost is a percentage of cost that is apportioned to this sales stream, which is in the scale-up mode. Could you please clearly quantify, what is the HR cost which is going towards, the current products, infrastructure and what is being built for the service infrastructure?
Okay, I may not have answers to all your questions, Aegis, but I'll give you an answer to some of them at least. Yeah. I don't know what you mean by a parallel sales organization. We are creating a sales organization which is focused on customers and partners. We used to be very brand focused. We used to be a product centric organization, not so much centered on how the requirements or demands of the market are changing, what solutions customers are wanting. What we've done now is we've rejigged our sales force to become a horizontal sales force which will fulfill the requirements of all kinds of products but from a requirements of customers upwards. So these salespeople will go to partners and they will go to customers as well and talk the full portfolio of Redington and supply that full portfolio. which is a very significant change. If you think of it earlier, one person will go to a partner or to a customer and talk exactly one product and nothing else. Now a partner, now a salesperson from Redington goes to a customer or a partner, talks the full solution, full portfolio of all the products that got across PC, printer, server, storage, network, security, cyber security, cloud, every single thing. All that is talked about by one person. Now, that's a futuristic organization. That is an organization that requires investment in training, development, and upgrading the skills of our partners, of our people. And also it requires a lot of new people as well in the company. That's the reason you will see that our employee cost is going up, because we are reskilling and we are also redesigning and and we are also hiring new people for the new way of doing business. A lot of our growth, in my opinion, is now coming because we are now so much more focused from a customer requirement upwards rather than product downwards. That is a significant shift, and we believe that that's the way the world is evolving. And so it allows us to become visible to far more opportunities, much higher level of opportunities in the market, and helps being able to fulfill those opportunities as we talk. That's the reason our shift in our business model from a traditional product distribution to a much more technology aggregator. So that aggregation model has to have a mandate of shifting to the employees to this integrated sales force model as well. What we're also supplementing the sales model is through digital business model shifts. So one shift, like I said earlier, we made was trying to become the best digital distributor in the world. Excuse me. We've got a one Redington digital platform, online Redington digital platform, which has started to function. More than 20% of my business in India has shifted to the digital model now already, which is a very, very significant shift. No company does that. A B2B shift of 20% in less than 1 year. It's a very, very profound shift. And as you go forward, you'll find that customers will get to see much more products, solutions, and services being offered through the platform in a very consultative sales model. So that's something which is important. That's the way it is going to happen. The other model that we did was a cloud, because the market is shifting to everything as a service. They're wanting to buy products as an OPEX model or as a subscription model instead of buying a CAPEX model. And our cloud platform exactly enables that. So what we're doing is, the shift in the model is towards a customer-centric, customer choice model. Customers are wanting to buy products in very, very different formats today: outright, OPEX, subscription, as a service. And here is Redington stepping up the game and saying, look, we've got technological tech capabilities to fulfill or to engage with our customers in every single domain, in every single manner that we do. Our investments in people are oriented towards the new ways of doing business. They are oriented towards service, building service capability of cybersecurity, of migration in the cloud, and implementation of cloud services. They are oriented towards doing e-commerce business, which is Redington Online. They are oriented towards getting more certified people in the cloud domain. So all in employee costs now, are the cost of employees in a core business has gone down by 1.5% overall last year over year, okay, between last year and this year. Whereas the cost of employees in the growth business has gone up by 25%+. So that's a significant shift, and I'm glad that we are getting the benefit of the lift of that shift.
Rajiv, thank you. That's very helpful. I'm Aegis's colleague. Just a quick second on this subject. My name is Sharad. You know, we understood what you just said. I think we understood it's hard for us as outsiders to really appreciate the depth of what you're doing. I'm sure you're doing the right thing. To simplify it for us, I'm sure you have some roadmap of when these significantly higher costs, which have significantly impacted P&L, will justify themselves to P&L. Please give us some roadmap of that.
I think that roadmap is available with us. We've got a P&L, we've got an ROI basis. The way we make investments in our company is very ROI driven. We assess the market, external market, and make the changes and shifts to our model. And in the course of next 4 to 6 quarters, you will see that each of these investments will be paying back significantly. Our services portfolio has already started to make a bit of a difference to our lives right now. Services have become 3% of my overall cloud business, has become services business now, which is significant. And our desire is that over the course of the next 3 to 4 years,
our services should become 10% of the overall cloud business. So the total cloud business, assuming it is 1,000 crores, 10% of that should be services. Now that services business will come at a very differentiated gross margin profile, maybe 30% or 30% plus. And that really significantly alters the profile of the overall business mix of the organization. So, so while these investments start to pay out in the next 4 to 6 quarters very strongly, the overall services transition that we are talking about will take a longer time of 3 to 4 years, because services is a domain game. It's not a body's game, it's a domain game.
Okay, you said you work on a return on capital rather than a margin basis. Can you give us how you think about this when you make a project decision? What time frames and what return on capital metrics does the company work with?
Different projects will have different capabilities. Depends upon the gestation time that the project will take. A services business will always take a little more longer gestation period because it is such a strong capabilities domain. A domain and capabilities driven game. So it will take a longer time in services business. Like I said, 3 to 4 years is the time when we are trying to make the shift. And that's not about getting the returns on the services business. That's about shifting to my goal of services becoming 10% of my cloud revenue. That's a 3 to 4 year goal. Okay. And it's not linked to what investments and what capital returns we are getting, but it's just a shift because it's a very profound shift. When you go to a digital model, our digital model has got two dimensions. It's got a dimension of lift and shift of the existing business, and then it's got the business of expanding ourselves into different geographies, into different territories, getting more cross-sell and upsell going, more partners coming in to sell, and that's a different model. So I think it's a very, very involved model, and I can take you through that in a separate call as well, but that's the way the model operates. It operates in a very strong business fundamentals of looking at the project and making sure that those projects are remunerative over the time of the project.
Okay. We'll seek a separate call with you then, because we'd like to understand how you all are thinking about spend versus the outcomes.
Yeah. I would love that. You please set it up. I love that, because I think you will get a good sense of how our future is. When we talk about becoming the number one digital distributor in the world, when we talk of becoming the number one provider in the cloud services in the world, how is that vision manifesting itself? You'll get a very, very good, you'll get a very good sense of that.
Okay. We'll come back to you and talk to you later. Thank you so much.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants, kindly limit your questions to 2 per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, please rejoin the queue. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kushagra from Old Bridge Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Just 2 questions. One is more of a clarification on the earlier participant's response, which is on the high interest rate environment. So just wanted to get your perspective on the competitive intensity. I mean, you did highlight some strategic initiatives in this high interest rate environment. And I just wanted to understand, are you using this time to probably sort of gain more market shares by taking in more working capital on your books, which your vendors would also like, which is visible in your creditor days, and probably something which some of your smaller peers may not be able to do. So is this something which can probably lead to more consolidation between the top 2 players, or you don't see much change in the working capital side of things, and it will largely be a function of how the segmental mix changes? And one question I would like to attach with this broader question is, in this whole process, are you also getting work which you otherwise would have avoided, and it may entail higher investments, higher discounts, higher provisioning? So just wanted to get a perspective on this whole thing. That's
okay.
My first question.
Yeah. You got not first question, you got 4 questions over here. So Kushagra, I'm mindful I'm going to be taking the shot each one of them. Your first question was on compete intensity and how is it playing out in the markets in which we are operating. See, distribution is a very localized business. It operates, the partners or the competition that we face in India, we don't face in the Middle East. The ones which you face in the Middle East, we don't face in Turkey or South Asia and all that. It's a very localized sort of a business. But as the market conditions have become tougher in the last 1 year, 1.5 years, we have seen that the space is up for consolidation. It is already happening. You've seen some competitors, even in India, and I can share names with you separately, but we've seen competition in India trying to sell out, cash out, or not being able to function in this revised or changed market scenario. It's exactly playing out the way, same way in Middle East and Africa as well, in Turkey as well. We know the competition which is up for grabs, which can be consolidated, or they are not able to play to their potential, and by virtue of that, that territory has become. So we are getting a bit of a share gain, a bit of a market gain, also because some of the competition has actually become weak. This happens all the time. When the market conditions become difficult, not every company has the ability of leadership capability, leadership depth to navigate the tough environment. So some competitors go away. Our gaining of, our desire is not to do business and gain share by compromising our profit or compromising our working capital or anything of that nature. It's just that since the conditions have become a little tougher, the receivable cycles from partners have become a little longer. The payments from customers have got delayed. The payments from vendors, like Krishnan mentioned earlier, have become tighter. So all of those conditions are coming together right now in a way where some of these working capital gets expanded or extended, just because at the moment of the point in time that we are in right now, all of these parameters are working in a certain direction, which is not the direction in which they were working about 4 quarters ago or 5 quarters ago. And hence the working capital goes up. It's not about taking a business like that, because that would be irresponsible, and we will never do that as a company. You know us long enough. But obviously, there is the way in which the customers are paying, the partners are ability to pay, and ways in which vendors are their cash cycles are there. If you follow the results of organizations like Dell, Lenovo, HP, IBM, Acer, Microsoft, Apple, Google, you'll get a very, very good example or sense of exactly what I'm talking about from a payment perspective. That's one. The second is the segment and mix changes. Now, we know for sure, when we saw this in our business model today, there is a shift in the segment. There is a shift in the business mix, because we used to be more dependent upon our access products business earlier, and our growth was a little less in the enterprise products, but we've seen a shift taking place. When the learn from home and work from home has reduced, which means the consumer product business has gone down. This is whole industry, okay? But we were fortunate, or we were, I think, foresight enough to pivot our model towards a more commercial, which is more SMB and more enterprise, more government business model, where you have security of projects and security of business and security of payments, all three of them being secure, and that led to a big lift in our TSG, which is technology solutions business, which is data center products and solutions and services. So that's the reason our growth in TSG this quarter is about 40%. That's a mix shift. Our growth in ESG, which is endpoint, which is consumer PCs and printers and all of that, that is 11%. That is much less. So I think you've seen a business mix shift. But all to the advantage is because we are able to deal with higher product, higher quality and higher value, and the more value distribution for the enterprise and the cloud kind of product lines. So mix change has taken place. It will continue to take place because that's the way the world is evolving.
Got it. That's quite helpful. The second question is, more sort of getting more clarification on your other expenses over a longer term. So last few quarters, you have been speaking about investments in digital currency disruptions in certain geos adding to your cost, right? But if I sort of look at your FY23 annual report, two-thirds of your increase from 1100 odd crores to 1450 odd crores is largely on account of bank charges, FX losses, and factoring, all three put together. And if I add travel, 80% of the incremental expenses gets covered. So the question really is that FY23 was largely investments on account of bank charges, factoring, and FX effect. The digital initiatives which you have been speaking about, probably a good part of it will come in FY24. There are certain other expenses, like, let's say, rent, warehousing, sales, promotion, and freight, which has not largely grown. So other expenses remaining flat from FY19 to 22, and now probably you will see these other expenses also sort of from 1450 or going forward. So just wanted a heads up or some sort of a color as to how do you see these growing over the next 2, 3, 4 years as well? Yeah, that's my second question. Thanks.
See, first, let me do a correlation between the investment that Rajeev talked about and the other expenses. See, investments will get spread across multiple components. One, investment in people in the new age businesses like the cloud, digital platform, etc. will be part of the as compensation. Some part of the investments will be as part of depreciation because these are capex in nature. So it's just not in other expenses. It's also there as part of the other expenses. Second, yes, we did discuss about factoring charges. With respect to forex and bank charges, very clearly, there are multiple markets which are going through stress in terms of dollar availability as well as on account of it, the depreciation in their currency. And this is across multiple markets. We discussed about Turkey, Egypt is going through stress, Sri Lanka was going through stress, and even now, yes, Bangladesh, Nigeria, many of the East African markets, I'm only talking about markets where we have presence. So with that, it is important, wherever there is a forward contract that's possible, we go for a plain vanilla forward contract and build it as part of our pricing. Or we have models where it becomes a natural hedging. But the challenge comes when you are not able to get the dollars. You have sold, you have realized, and the customer has paid you at the revised rate. After that, we are not able to repatriate and we are getting stuck. It's where we have to incur these forex losses and the corresponding the bank charges for remittance, etc. So some of this are very unique situations. We are trying to manage as much as possible. I wouldn't say that it is the best of the situation, but we think it will take some time before all these get cleared, because all of us know this is linked to the global economic situation, and some of this are going to take time in terms of coming out. But wherever we see some forex challenges, we are downsizing our business quite significantly, and whatever growth that you see is in spite of that. That is something that we are trying to play in a balanced form.
Sure. Thanks and all the best.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Pritesh Chheda from Lucky Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. After the whole call, I still couldn't understand one part, is where, one side you mentioned that your investments will continue for 4 to 6 quarters. And I just want to know the quantum of investments which are running through the P&L. And, until Q3, we were looking at about 2.5% as kind of a more stable state margin. But what we see now is a substantial difference. So it will be very helpful. First, we quantify the exact amount of these investments so we can check the P&L X of these investments. If you could call out to what extent or what timeline these investments are going to run through the P&L. We're extremely happy with your revenue growth. It's a commendable achievement. But when there are deviations in margin like this, it's like a 30-40% deviations in EBITDA. So if you would call out clearly, it would be very helpful for every one of us to understand.
Good. Thank you, Pratesh. So if I need to tell you the cost of investment across various components, it would be about between 25 to 30 crores per quarter.
So then that doesn't explain the deviation in margin from, what we are seeing. So then the residual cost, other than these investments, are a more regular cost built up now, which we see in your P&L?
Yeah, those are regular costs, but those are inflated now, and we have discussed those components. See, you need to look at it when you talk about the operating margin, look at it from the perspective of the gross margin. There is some dilution in the gross margin we discussed. Second is the OPEX increase. And the OPEX increase, there is an investment portion and there is a regular business portion where some costs have gone up, which over a period of time will get corrected.
We talked to you, Pratesh, earlier. What we mentioned to you was there's a gross margin drop which took place of points.
Sir, I understand the GM impact. It's not a substantial number.
Let me complete that so that you'll get a good sense of it. Okay. You're right, the GM impact, it just gets you about 48 crores, nothing more than that. Out of which the GM is 25 crores, which was 0.12%, and then the balance of 22 crores is technology investment. The way Krishan mentioned, 25 to 30 crores of technology investment in the quarter. And then there was, like you said, the business mix shift and all that. We've seen that situation of Q1, which is unique because in normally you don't have such a strong telco business mix in Q1, which happened for us in last quarter. It won't happen. So I think we are at a point in time in our journey right now where this happened, and we are going to be getting back, normally clawing back to the business mix becoming better and the bottom flattening out, and we clawing back to our normal level. So while you may think that this is a new norm, but this is not a new norm. The new norm is going to be where we used to be earlier. So I think you will find us getting back, clawing back in a very good way. So I hope that will round up from your perspective. It's just not a single dimension in business.
Can I clarify one thing? The business mix would have flowed or impacted your GP, right? At least that clarification you could give?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So other than GP, it's a 25 crore cost for tech which you have called out. Just to conclude here, so all the other costs which have got inflated, barring the tech cost and barring the GP part, GP is because of mix. But all the other costs other than the tech use, you are calling out that they will normalize in the subsequent quarter.
Yeah. So when you say subsequent quarter, I don't want you to take it as Q2.
Quarters. You mentioned quarters. Yes, that's the way it will be. Yes.
Your subsequent was 4 to 6 quarters.
Yes, that's right.
Right. Now I want to just ask, why are these costs inflated then? We can understand the tech cost part.
No. We did now discuss, right? This is in terms of the factoring cost, the cost of, the forex, that there was a question about it. So these were some of the one-off issues that are there, being present in multiple markets, and this is something that we need to handle. And the external environment really is not very conducive from a business sense.
Okay. And lastly, sir, on the working capital cycle, some quarters back we had mentioned that we will revert back to the peak, which normal number, which was 27 to 30 days.
No, 35 days. We said 35 days.
Okay, there were a few quarters where you mentioned that, no problem. But now these numbers are even higher than that. So where should the working capital stabilize?
Okay. See, what you need to understand, Pratesh, is there is a severe slowdown in the markets. And we have a choice to go with the market or try to outperform. And these are some of the levers that are available, and as definitely the pendulum is, as there is a normalization, in a slowdown environment, unfortunately the pendulum shifts to the other end and then it will get normalized. So you will see this getting corrected to the positive territory, but it will take some time. We are ahead. Be rest assured.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much and all the best to you, sir.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we would take that as the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Rajiv Srivastava for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Okay, all right. Look, I think, thanks so much. I think it was a very, very good engagement, interaction. Appreciate all the questions. If you have any more than happy to make sure, please just send them back to us, and we'll be more than happy to clarify or respond to every single question that you might have. We, like I said, we did have a very robust quarter on on revenue growth, on gross margin. We know for sure where we are headed. We exactly have the understanding of where we are headed from a profitability perspective and how it will pattern out, but we'll come back to normalcy very, very quickly because those levers are available to us. This is a scale business. This clearly is a business that requires scale. This clearly is a business where it's a winner takes all sort of a situation which happens in this business. We've got to be mindful of making the right trade-offs all the time in business. Trading off 0.12% of GM just because it was a very, very responsible thing because we wanted to make sure that we can maintain our business momentum in a difficult environment and demonstrate the lead that we have. And that lead becomes so much more beneficial to any organization the moment the situation starts to become normal in the external financial world. And that's exactly the way it is going to play out. We've seen that happen multiple times, and we will see that happen one more time. And I'm glad that we maintain the momentum. I'm glad we maintain our gross margin in the ballpark range. And we seem to have a very strong thing going process. India did a very, very good growth. The revenue on all financial parameters did very well. The rest of the world was more challenged because of different countries behaving, impacting differently. Turkey behaves differently than Nigeria. Egypt, we all know for sure, had a tremendous amount of financial losses. All of that, forex losses, all of those got impacted. But your company or this company navigated those in a very sensible, very balanced manner to make sure that we stay healthy for mid to long. So I appreciate the interaction and please reach out if there's anything else. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Redington Limited, that concludes this conference. We thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.